Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening this week. I'm Jared Serbu. Glad you're with us. A few different topics to cover during the hour today. Later on in the program, we'll hear from Terry Halverson, who's now in charge of the Defense Department CIO's office after having recently been appointed Principal Deputy CIO. We'll hear some of his first public remarks since taking on that job, including what to expect from the new leadership there. Also, DoD acquisition officials have rolled out their Superior Supplier Program, a way to reward vendors with a consistent history of good performance. We'll hear some of the explanation we got during the program's rollout announcement. First up, though, the National Security Agency has just taken a major step forward in an effort it hopes will help private companies prevent and respond to cybersecurity incidents. As a first step in what the agency calls the Cyber Assistance Program, it evaluated companies who provide cyber response services in 21 separate focus areas. A few weeks ago, it approved and accredited six different companies. One of the firms that earned NSA's seal of approval was Lockheed Martin. Chandra McMahon is that company's vice president for commercial markets. She talked with me about what the program entails and Lockheed's approach to cyber incident response.
Really, it is has four pillars to it. The first one, which they just released and accredited companies for, was around incident response. But there are three other areas that they're also looking to do accreditations for, that being intrusion detection, vulnerability assessment, and penetration testing. And basically what the Information Assurance Directorate is doing is allowing companies to submit an application in order to be accredited in that specific cyber area. And so this first one is in incident response. And what they're looking to do is have a set of accredited cyber incident service providers who have gone through a very detailed and thorough review of a comprehensive set of areas within the incident response assistance area, ensuring that they can deliver consistent services using processes, that they have the technical staff and expertise to be able to deploy quickly and capably in support of an agency or customer that might need incident response services. And this is really all focused around what are considered national security systems owners. And as you know, there's a broad definition of that and includes all U.S. government classified networks as well as some unclassified networks that support the government. So in a nutshell, it really is accrediting a set of companies for their incident response capabilities.
And clearly this is the type of work that you and the five other companies that got the accreditation would be pursuing, even if this program didn't exist. What to you is the value of having NSA's certification, NSA's imprimatur on your capabilities here?
And yes, it's absolutely a true statement that Lockheed Martin has been doing incident response work on behalf of the government and our commercial customers for many years. What this accreditation program specifically offers, though, is, you know, the NSA's IAD, Information Assurance Directorate, having done a thorough review of the capabilities we have and the processes we use and the expertise that we have to perform these services, they're saying that we're meeting, you know, a level of quality standards and best practices, as well as meeting a set of NSA-developed criteria. And so I think what that does is that enables, with this accreditation, you know, customers both commercially and within the government to understand that when they have Lockheed Martin come in and do these services, it is at, you know, a fairly significant level of quality and standard.
You mentioned that the focus is on the owners of national security systems. I wonder, though, do those skill sets that you're bringing in under this program map to other areas where cyber incidents might happen, say the financial sector, whatever?
Absolutely. Incident response and the skill set required to do incident response to protect the networks and the information technology systems that government agencies use as well as commercial companies use. So that's absolutely correct. And you can use these same skill sets in both the commercial as well as in the government space. What's also unique about the government space, when you work in the classified networks space, you have another level of skill set that's required as you're working with systems that obviously are of a classified nature. They're architected a certain way, but incident response skills and services are directly applicable to commercial as well as the government space.
And so, but government agencies would not be purchasing this service under this program, right? I mean, this is targeted only at commercial companies.
Well, yes, I think it's important to clarify what's happening with this program.
Sure.
So, when Lockheed Martin applied, the NSA and the government is not paying companies to become accredited, nor are they charging a fee in order for us to seek the accreditation.
Right.
So basically what Lockheed Martin did was we worked to complete this extensive application and submitted it. And basically what the NSA's IAD is saying is you have this stamp of accreditation. And what that means then is as we go and look to perform this work for the government and also in the commercial space, we're able to show or demonstrate as a credential or a qualification we have that we meet this level of qualification.
And so I think to get the accreditation, you and the five other companies had to get an assessment in 21 different areas around cyber incident response. I wonder, after all those companies meet that same criteria, does the end product basically look uniform across you and what your competitors are selling? How much room does that give you to differentiate your offerings from what everybody else is doing?
Well, I think that there absolutely is differentiation because there are different ways and approaches and tools that can be used to conduct incident response, right? And so each company has their approach to that. I think from a Lockheed Martin offering perspective, obviously having the skills and the tools to go in to do this, but also being able to provide them what we call full spectrum cyber capability. Because if you think about incident response, it's really going in a reactive mode after something has happened and you're trying to contain and localize and then remediate the environments, right? And really what Lockheed Martin wants to do as a strategic supplier to the government and our commercial customers is we want to be more proactive. We want to work with them on implementing intelligence-driven defense that Lockheed Martin promotes. And so, you know, we can not only provide incident response services, but also a broad array of services that while we can tackle the incident response at hand and work to contain and remediate that, we can also help those agencies and the rest our commercial customers figure out ways to put in intelligence-driven defense capabilities so that they're not spending time in incident response. They're really spending time up front, which is making sure they don't have the intrusion or they're more proactive about stopping an incident early on.
Yeah, mitigating future attacks. So you may not be able to get into this too much without revealing your secret sauce, but what else can you say about what's entailed in a cyber incident response under this program? I mean, what do you actually do when you go in?
Well, I think from that perspective, it's really about how quickly the company can be enabled to provide this service. So when you get the phone call that says, we have an issue and we need help, you need to be able to immediately deploy, not only within the U.S., but globally, skilled staff to be able to go on site and assess the situation, start doing analysis, whether it's looking at logs or network traffic data or looking at the host systems, and trying to triangulate on, you know, how extensive is the problem, what are the quick things that can be done to contain the issue, and then identify like a containment plan and then a remediation plan, and then beyond that, do some post-incident analysis to really look at how did you get in that position in the first place, and as a result of that, provide a broader set of recommendations that need to be implemented more for the long term. So I think the best way to think about it is like deploying an emergency medical team or a firefighting team. Think of these incident response teams much along the line of that. They are cyber firefighters, and what they do is they go in, you know, to the scene of the fire where the incident is on the network and work to contain it and then remediate it. Does that help you get a sense for the kind of service and how it needs to be quickly deployed. You need specialized tools, and you need expertise that can use that tool, those tools, in order to quickly and capably contain the incident, and then stop the fire, and then understand what caused the fire in the first place.
Chandra McMahon is the Vice President for Commercial Markets at Lockheed Martin. We're talking about the NSA's new cyber assistance program. It's just accredited 6 companies as meeting NSA standards for responding to cyber incidents involving national security systems that are owned and operated by private companies. We'll talk more after our first break. This is on DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servu. Thanks for listening to On DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servu. Chandra McMahon is my guest for this part of the show this week. She's the Vice President for Commercial Markets at Lockheed Martin. We're discussing the accreditations the NSA issued a couple weeks ago to 6 companies, including Lockheed, essentially verifying that they have the bona fides to respond and remediate cyber attacks involving national security systems in the private sector. Before the break, she likened the response process to responding to a fire. She says it involves not just responding to the emergency, but helping companies shore up their systems against future attacks.
Beyond that immediate, putting out the fire and preventing future fire work, I've got to assume that when you go into one of these incidents, you discover a lot of new information that would be valuable in preventing similar attacks against other companies. So is there any sort of framework for sharing that kind of information, both with the government and with other companies that are doing this kind of work?
So typically what happens is, as Lockheed Martin is engaged on behalf of the government or a commercial customer, we go in to deal with that incident response, and then the information or the intelligence we collect around that response then gets provided to that customer. And then it's left to the government or the commercial customer based on what information sharing programs they already exist in, whether or not they need to share that information with law enforcement. They really are in the lead in terms of the intelligence from that, how it gets shared back out to the various information sharing, law enforcement, et cetera. Does that make sense?
It does. And then a similar question, the intelligence inputs into what you're able to do here. Is NSA sharing, for example, classified threat signatures that enable you to do this work better on the front end before you go into an incident?
Right. And for this specific accreditation, no. Really what this accreditation says is we've got the skill set, the expertise, and the process that we can go into any system and network and start doing incident response absent any kind of other information.
Got it. And then another thing I'd be curious about, as you alluded to earlier, Lockheed's been in the cyber business for a long time. So in order to get this accreditation, how much work did you have to do to build new capabilities within the company versus taking what you already had organically and just kind of structuring it and formatting it to meet NSA's criteria?
We basically took, results of what all the work that we've done over the last several years and formatted it into the nomination or into the application. And so there was really no new material or new service offering or anything that needed to be creating. Again, we've been in this business for a very long time. We've been deploying and providing these incident response service for a number of years across a wide array of customers. And really it was about taking our content and putting it into the structure that NSA's IAD had requested for review.
The other 3 accreditations that NSA is working on, do you have any kind of read on the timeline for when those are going to be finalized?
At this time, we don't have a read on the schedule for those. What I can share with is the schedule for this accreditation we have received started probably about early to the middle of last year. We submitted our application towards the end of last year, and the accreditation came forward now. And at this time, we really don't have the schedule or the accreditation framework for the other 3 areas, which are intrusion detection, vulnerability assessment, and penetration testing. And we expect those to come in the future.
But fair to say, you're going to pursue all, or are pursuing all 3 of the other ones too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We will be pursuing, we plan on pursuing the other three accreditation frameworks. Clearly, we want more guidance on what they will entail, and we look forward to hearing from NSA's Information Assurance Directorate when they're ready to share that out with industry. I just am very excited about this program. I think that as you look broadly across, you know, the government and in the commercial space, a number of agencies and commercial customers are having new incident response, be in that more reactive mode. And so a lot of companies are having to, you know, require or use these services. What we're really looking for is with some of these other accreditations is to move things to be more proactive. And that's where I think that we need to get across the critical infrastructure industry. Not spend less time doing incident response and more time on the proactive nature of cyber defense. And I think that that would benefit critical infrastructure industries tremendously at this point.
And you were explaining to me offline a little bit about how one of the things to watch here will be whether or how these kinds of certifications play a role in the acquisition process in the future. Explain just a little bit for our listeners what you mean by that.
Well, if you think about it right now, this accreditation hadn't existed previously, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the government and commercial customers have been acquiring these services without having an NSA accreditation out there.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
And so now what we're looking to see is, you know, as agencies and companies look to hire for these services, will they just look at this as a discriminator, right? A competitive advantage discriminator, or will they make it a requirement that, you know, if they have to contract for incident response assistance services, will they require that companies be this CIRA accredited?
And how would they acquire it? I mean, is there, as you kind of said before, you need to get in there quickly. You can't go through a long competitive procurement. Can agencies right now buy these quickly with a task order off GSA schedules or whatever?
Well, there are means within the government for them to be able to access these services quickly. That is in place, and there are different formulations for how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think we should keep our eye on, now that this accreditation is out there, how will, you know, the government and commercial customers move towards requiring that when they're doing incident response that they have a CIRA accredited provider.
Chandra McMahon is Vice President for Commercial Markets at Lockheed Martin. We've been talking about NSA's new accreditation process for companies who respond to cyber incidents involving national security systems. Lockheed is one of six companies the NSA certified under its cyber assistance program. We'll link to more information about the program at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. When we come back, we'll stay with cyber and IT issues. Terry Halverson is the new acting DOD Chief Information Officer. We'll hear remarks from him when we return. This is On DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbian.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Anthony Principi was Secretary of Veterans Affairs during the first term of President George W. Bush, Acting Secretary Sloan Gibson. What should he do immediately?
I would suggest he bring in a few senior executives and sit down around a table and say, how do we move forward? These are the people who are in the trenches, closest to patient care. You need to hear from those people, not from a bunch of political appointees who may not know.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
We're back on DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Switching gears now from cyber emergency incident response to the day-to-day management of IT in the Defense Department. After a brief period during which there were two vacancies at the top of the DOD CIO's office, one of those slots is now filled. Terry Halverson recently left his post as Department of the Navy CIO in order to serve as acting DOD CIO. He gave some of his first public remarks since taking that job, describing his plans for DOD IT leadership at the annual AFSEA Nova Navy IT Day earlier this month. In this segment, we're going to listen to an extended excerpt from that talk. And as you'll hear, as he did in the Navy, he's pushing the idea that business-related IT needs to get a lot more affordable for the government.
Now, affordable doesn't mean just finding the dollars. It means understanding in today's environment, when we make an investment in the infrastructure, I am absolutely then de-investing, if that's a good word, in something else. There's no new money here. There's less money. So as we make investments, some part of the system, whether it's in the IT world or some other part of our business in DOD, is not getting the money. We really do need to understand those connections and second and third order impacts much better. It's the other reason we've got to be more discreet in our definitions of what JIE events are going to move forward. How do we do that? I think we also have to recognize we are not, from an IT cyber perspective, all in the same environment. And what I mean by that is we're not, all of the MilDeps, all the DoD agencies are not in the same spot with respect to IT. Some places are more advanced in some areas, a little behind in others. How do you make the investments in a collective way that make the most gain for the entire enterprise? That is not an easy thing to do, but it's something that we've got to spend the time to work on. And again, we've got to understand how all that fits together, both from a mission standpoint and a cost standpoint. So you'll see some emphasis on understanding the business principles. So I want to say something about business principles. People sometimes ask, well, you're just about the business. You don't want to talk about the mission. The mission is my business. We can pretty it up, but we are in the business of warfighting. That is our business. Now, to support the business of warfighting, we're in every other business. We're in logistics. We're actually in real estate. We're in all of those businesses. So how do we understand the interrelationships that have to happen from a cost perspective and a mission perspective to make it all work? And that's something we've got to spend some time on. And I think that means we've got to be better at business. We've got to understand the cost, performance factors to a higher degree than we do today. We have to understand industry to a higher degree than we do today. So one of the things that you will see a little bit of focus on at the DOD level for a while is how do we understand business? We need to know as much about all of you as you want to know about us to be better buyers, to better deal with industry at large. So you'll see some focus on that. We're going to spend some time understanding things like what's going on in the industry, both from a standpoint of the technology gains, but what's going on financially in industry. We ought to know, frankly, the stock prices when the fiscal year ends for all of the big companies and small companies we do business with. If you were in industry, you would know that. You know about your partners. We should do the same thing. That means we have to work on transparency jointly. We need to be more transparent out of the DOD level, at the CIO office, but you are also going to have to be more transparent in your discussions with us. This is kind of a system of systems even outside. DOD does not work well without industry. Has to happen, particularly in the IT business. I think one of the things we've got to understand better on DOD, in the business areas, and I'm talking about the business areas everybody has, you know, personnel, finance, logistics, we are not the driver of that marketplace. Not like we are in the weapon systems. There are very few other customers for weapon systems than us. We kind of corner the market there. On the other hand, in the commercial world, we don't corner the market. We're a very big fish in that market, and we've got to learn to behave as a very big fish in that market. How do we influence the market? But we're not going to own the market. We're not going to be able to drive all the things that are in the market. The good news for us is if we understand it better, we can actually get better pricing. I absolutely believe that. I think there are more room for, you can call them efficiencies. I like to call them effectiveness results in the IT world. Now, that doesn't mean all the savings will come from the IT money. It can come from the process money. So one of the things you will see happen at the DOD level is that the CIO and the DCMO, under Dave Tillotson, who is the acting DCMO, Dave and I are going to be seamless in our approach. We will be united in almost everything we do, because between business process and business systems, that's how you get things done, and that link has to be very clean. So you will see Dave Tillotson and I do an awful lot together, and when one of us speaks, we'll be speaking for the other office at the same time. You're going to see that happen. You will see us focus initially maybe more than we have in the past on how do we get the DOD level processes and systems right. Maybe a little less focus on the MILDEPs and a little more focus on DOD. And I think the belief is there if we can get some of the DOD processes and systems right, that will move down. We influence how everyone has to behave. You will see us much more interested in business-like questions as we deal with everybody. And you will see us be more involved with the commercial sector. We have to get more involved with business.
We're listening to Terry Halverson, the new acting DOD CIO, talking about his vision for the DOD CIO's office and his priorities. Again, these remarks came at the recent AFSEA Nova Navy IT Day in Tysons Corner, Virginia.
Some of the things I think you will see shortly so we can get some of these questions out of the way. We are working very hard to get the final approval for the level 3 and 4 data to be stored in commercial areas. I have asked my staff to come back in 45 days with a process and plan that we can hand industry that says, if you want to play, here's how you play. Here are the standards, not the solutions. Here are the standards you have to meet around security. Here are the other storage performance factors that you have to meet. I think we on the DOD side have to get a little more creative in how we accept the answers from industry. I think we need to set standards on all those areas, and we have to set performance factors, but we should not be writing what the answer has to be. So people ask me, what's that mean? I think that means there's almost no data storage, data transmission, data exchange scenario we won't use. I think we will have everything from purely commercial data centers in a commercial cloud to potentially commercially run or managed, might be the better word, data centers that exist on government installations inside government buildings and everything in between. I think you'll see much more emphasis on competition inside the commercial world. I just think we have to do that. It is the way I think we can control the pricing better. That's going to make a more dynamic market for you all to play in. I understand that, and we're going to try to be prepared to help you do that. I will keep saying again, one of the things that we have to do, people said I shouldn't use the word friendly to industry, but I think that is the world. I think we have to be viewed as much as we can, given the current laws and rules, as true partners. It is a partnership. Partnerships, you all in the civilian world have partnerships that are governed by rules and laws, but you have partnerships. We've got to figure out how we do that. I think that will take some different behavior on industry, too, because I think what we're going to have to find out is to get what we want, it's going to take best-of-breed sets of solutions that require maybe different companies to truly partner. I believe that, too, that if we want to get best-of-breed, the best set of answers, there's no one group out there that has all of the answers. How do we make all of us partner better to deliver what I think we actually all want, which is, yes, you all want to make money, but I do believe you want to make money and do the best interest in the country. I don't think they are disjointed efforts. I think they actually can be the same. And we've got to work to do that because we're at a critical time. I mean, we're in an interesting time in the country, and I think there's tremendous opportunity brought to us by the current financial crisis. There are some things we would have never talked about if it wasn't for the financial crisis. We've got to take advantage of that fully. How do we do that? And I think that means, frankly, this is more about cultural change than it is technology change. I think we've got the technologies to answer most of our questions. Can we change the cultural things that we do to get us to the point where we'll behave in a way to get to the change is some of the things we've got to talk about. There are a lot of examples when we said, let's all do enterprise solutions that didn't work. They did not turn out to be better in terms of cost and performance. So we have an uphill battle. We've got to show that that can be the case. So it is transparency. I think listening to the MilDeps, making sure they get a chance to show us what they're doing, while holding them to the same level of data standards and transparency. One of the things that we have recently done, some of you know there were some NDA language about who could approve data center expenditures. For initially, I think some good reasons, that was centered, and the DOD CIO had to give that approval. As we have learned and we've looked at abilities to see the data that the services were approving, it struck me as that was no longer the right place to hold that decision. So as of Tuesday, we signed a memo that gave the MilDeps the authority to approve most data center money while requiring that they still report the expenditures so that we can look at them, compare them, and get trends. And it even says in a letter, if you don't continue to give us the money, then you'll no longer have the delegation authority. I think one of the things I truly believe in, and you are a little bit where you came from, I came into the Army, and the chief of staff of the Army was General Meyer, and he, at that time, had this thing called power down, which was get decisions at the lowest level they can be made effectively, quickly, with the right level of risk around a decision. One of the things we're going to look at is, where is that? In some cases, because of the systems today, it probably is at the DOD level. But in many cases, I believe pushing that decision authority with the right structure to gather the data so that we can see the trends that those decisions are making and the trends are going right is absolutely the right thing to do. I also think when you do that and you trust people with those decisions, particularly in the DOD environment, I think you build complete trust.
That's Terry Halverson, the new acting DOD CIO, describing his outlook for the management of Defense Department IT. As you heard, building partnerships and, in some cases, delegating more authority to the military services. And again, those remarks came from this month's annual Navy IT Day, hosted by the Northern Virginia chapter of AFSEA. One more break, and when we return, a look into DOD's newest acquisition initiative, rewarding what it sees as its best vendors through the new Superior Supplier Program. More on that just ahead. This is On DOD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. We're back on DOD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Switching topics again for our final segment. As we reported in our semi-weekly Inside the Reporter's Notebook feature this week, the Pentagon's finally decided to move forward with an acquisition improvement idea it's been kicking around since 2010. It's called the Superior Supplier Incentive Program, designed to provide rewards to DOD vendors who have a consistent history of good performance scores on their contracts, and to do it in a way that doesn't give them an unfair advantage in future competitions. For our last few minutes, a short excerpt from the Pentagon press briefing announcing that program. You'll hear two voices here. In a minute, Sean Stackley, the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, and Acquisition. But first, Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology.
We tried to do this under Better Buying Power 1.0. We were not able to work our way through all the bureaucracy and the difficulties of how do you do this. So rather than introducing a DOD-wide system at that time, we decided to give the Navy the opportunity to do a pilot program in that area. And this idea originated actually from the Navy. So over the last year or so, we've been working on that, and Sean will be talking about the introduction of the results of the first round of our Superior Supplier Program for the Navy pilot. And I've already directed the Army and the Navy that they will expand and they will adopt the same methodology basically going forward. So a year from now, all the services will have published results on their superior suppliers and identify those suppliers. We continue to try to promote effective competition, which is the next major area. We are not increasing our level of competition, direct competition, and I'm disappointed in that. I think that's partly a result of the budget situation we're in. Declining budgets reduce some of our opportunities, but there are enough opportunities still there that I think we can do better. We're going to be focusing very much on that going forward. Improving tradecraft and the acquisition of services, the next major category. We're making progress there, but we still have a long way to go there, and I think that's probably our greatest area of potential improvement still. And then last but not least is improving the professionalism of the acquisition workforce. Sean and I just left the award ceremony for the Navy's exceptional performers in acquisition. And this is acquisition across the board. It's not just major programs. It's facilities, contracting in general, service contracting, sustainment, a whole host of activities that fall under acquisition. And we don't do nearly enough to recognize our professionals. And I'll be emphasizing that as I mentioned in my response to Senators Levin and McCain.
Again, that's Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology, explaining the Pentagon's new Superior Supplier Incentive Program at a press briefing last week. For a little bit more on that, here's Sean Stackley, the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, and Acquisition.
An industry best practice is to recognize your best suppliers and to strengthen your relationship with those suppliers. And we looked at this as an opportunity DOD-wide in the pilot program specifically for the Navy this year to provide the recognition, which by itself is a very strong incentive, and then following on to that recognition for those superior suppliers to sit down across the table to determine what additional incentives that we could work across a contract would be appropriate to give consideration for that sustained superior performance. So our first challenge was to how do you, in fact, identify who the superior suppliers are? And we're looking for a method that is objective, that is clearly understood by industry and frankly, the public at large, and we'll be explaining this in detail to the Congress, and one that is fairly simple to manage. And, in fact, we've got an evaluation system that's in place today that we use across all of our programs called CPARS. It's Contractor Performance and Appraisal Review System that is objective, that industry does get the opportunity to comment on. And so when we use that as a basis of evaluating contractors' performance, it's well understood and we don't expect too much debate. Now, with that said, determining how do you draw the field in, for your contractors under review? We started by picking the top 30 corporations. And when you pick the top 30 corporations, in fact, you capture greater than 85% of your spend for supplies and research and development. And then we went the next level and broke those corporations down into their business units and ended up with about 80 different suppliers that we're evaluating. And then we took the top 30 for final evaluation, where we're looking at based on our obligation data, dollars, and ranked those top 30 and broke out from that total pack 9 companies or business units of a larger corporation that stand out above the rest in terms of their performance, sustained performance over a 3-year period as evaluated by the program managers or contracts organizations that they support. And I believe everyone's been handed a presser, a release that outlines who those 9 corporations are. We'll be announcing that formally today, and then we'll be engaging with those superior suppliers, as I described earlier, to take a look at what do we do across a contract that, in fact, drives cost into their performance, that when you look at their sustained performance, we might determine is not necessary given given their overall performance and value to the Department of the Navy. This is a pilot. We expect a lot of feedback, frankly, from the winners, and we also expect feedback from the rest of the field. And we'll take that feedback and reshape this going forward as we look forward to the 2015 awards.
I think we're trying to let industry know what the customer is seeing from industry. So I think for the industry part, those who are not in that top tier that Sean talked about, the recognition of where you are, where your business units are, I think is going to be very important incentive for them to find out from their customer what the problems are and to do something about it. So that's one of the impacts we're looking at. Do you want to add to that?
No, the only thing I would add is typically they get that feedback on a contract-by-contract right. basis. Now when you roll it up at the company level or the business unit level, then you get to start to see a pattern breaking out. Mm-hmm. And as I described, public recognition is a very strong incentive. And more than that, we do want to sit down and say, you've been a good performer, so let's sit down and figure out what we can do across a contract that within our regulations that makes sense to provide added incentive to stay on that path. I described up front 30 corporations, break it down to business units, 80 business units or companies. What you'll see is a lot of familiar business units of corporations, but you're not seeing all their business units. So I expect that inside of a major corporation, business unit A and business unit B are having discussions about why one is and one is not on the list, in addition to the other companies that are going to be striving to get across the line.
Again, that's Sean Stackley, the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, and Acquisition. Before that, you heard Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology, talking about DOD's new Superior Supplier Incentive Program, designed to reward Pentagon vendors who have a consistent history of good performance on their contracts. As you heard, the Navy's already got its program up and running after an initial pilot program, and Kendall has ordered the Army and the Air Force to build their own programs based loosely on what the Navy has already done. Earlier in the show, we heard from Terry Halverson, the acting Department of Defense Chief Information Officer, on his way forward for the office. We also discussed the NSA's new Cyber Incidents Response Program with a chief official from Lockheed Martin. That was Chandra McMahon, the Vice President for Commercial Markets at Lockheed. They're one of six companies the NSA just certified as meeting their standards for responding to cyber incidents. If you missed any of those other parts of the show, we will post the entire program, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the show. Very glad you could join us. Please tune in again next week. I'm Jared Servio. So long.
You've been listening to On DOD with Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DOD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.